Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101 from Brian Spain Domain. Today we are going to take a look at a period in Spanish history that has been in many ways forgotten about, mainly because it was overshadowed by the Spanish Civil War and the Franco dictatorship, which would follow a few years later. But a lot happened during this period, and in many ways, these events would contribute heavily to the events leading up to the Spanish Civil War. We are talking about the Primo de Rivera dictatorship. Now, I'm sure many of you are surprised to hear about it because you didn't even know that a dictatorship ever existed before that. But yes, in the 1920s, about 10 years or so before Franco started to take over, there was another military government trying to control just about every aspect of life in this country. And it's sort of a strange dictatorship in many ways. So let me tell you more about it. So you can learn more about it and you can tell me what you think. The year is 1923 and the situation in Spain is the following. Alfonso XIII is the king. He's been the king since 1904. Spain is a constitutional monarchy, which means the king was the head of state, but there was a parliament and a minister. There were two major parties, the conservative and liberal parties, which had basically been taking turns running the government over the previous decades. We're talking about a situation that started in the 1870s. It was done peacefully, mainly because these two parties normally agreed to whoever was going to be the winner of the elections before the election. So they were rigged. But unanimously. But those very parties were starting to bicker amongst themselves, and they had a lot of debate on where the direction of this country was going and what they should do to solve some of these problems, and they began to splinter. And that meant that many of the cabinets of these governments were lasting, in some cases, just a few months. Especially as we were leading up to 1923. So that meant political instability was on the rise. In addition to that, you had all the different workers' movements, ideological movements, anarchists, socialists, and the communists, who in particular were spurred on by the success of the Russian Revolution. Then you had nationalist movements, the Basque Country and Catalonia, who were making greater demands for more home rule and in some cases independence outright. And then you had the foreign front, where Spain had become caught in a colonial quagmire in Morocco. If you'll recall, since about 1909, Morocco, or the northern part of Morocco, a region called RIF, R-I-F, had become a protectorate of Spain, and it had become basically a nightmare for Spain, because it was almost impossible for this country to control. And there were a lot of Berber tribes, and they were indomitable. And they were recently led by a leader named Abdelkrim, who was proving a headache, a major headache for the Spanish military. In fact, in 1921, just 2 years before that, there was a battle. It wasn't really a battle, but it was called the Disaster of Anual. This is when a large Spanish force was trying to retreat back to the coast or back to its sort of camp, and it got caught by these Rifian tribes, almost essentially massacred. It was a nightmare. It was one of the worst defeats in modern history for this country. And then you had the economy. Now, even though this had been booming during the First World War, because in World War One, if you recall, Spain was neutral. So that was good for its economy. But after that, it began to falter. So things were a real big mess. And these were ingredients of a country in major crisis. And if you've been following Spanish history at all, and you've been listening to my podcast, you'll know that the answer to these problems here, since the early 19th century, was the good old-fashioned coup d'etat, where the military sort of takes over and says, things are out of control, and we're going to bring some order to this country. And in 1923, it was just the next coup of many. Miguel Primo de Rivera was a general. He was a commander in Barcelona, and he called upon his fellow members of the armed forces around the country to join him. Now, initially, most held out in anticipation of what King Alfonso XIII would say, because he was commander-in-chief, and their allegiance should have been to him. But Alfonso was not so secretly elated about the coup d'etat, because he realized that the country was falling apart and he was losing control, and that the parliament didn't seem to be able to come up with any satisfactory solution. So to have the military come in and bring order to everything sounded like not such a bad idea to him. The problem was, it was against the constitution. In theory, you should have had some elections, but that didn't happen. Alfonso was up in San Sebastian on the northern coast of Spain in the Basque Country. It was September. He was sort of wrapping up his summer vacation, and he rushed back to Madrid and met with Primo de Rivera and many other members of the military, and they decided to create a military cabinet to run the show for a while. Primo de Rivera suspended the constitution, dissolved parliament, and ruled by decree, aiming to modernize Spain's infrastructure and economy, amongst other things. This military cabinet was supposed to be there for just about 3 months, and then until everything sort of settled down, then they would take a look at the situation and decide whether they should continue or not. And they kept renewing that period. Primo de Rivera would stay on for 6 years. Now, Spain wasn't the only country leaning in this direction. We know that Germany was getting close to letting the Nazi party take over. Other countries like Poland and Hungary also had a strong man at the helm. And of course, then you had Benito Mussolini, who had come to power just a year before, 1922, in sort of very similar circumstances. The king in Italy sort of didn't do anything to stop the fascist party from coming and taking over, and he was happy to let that happen. In fact, Alfonso XIII once visited Italy after that, and he sort of was happy to boast that he now had his own Mussolini. So there were many people who felt like this was the answer to many of these countries' woes. But we all know that in many ways it was just going to make things worse. So what did Primo de Rivera do in this almost forgotten dictatorship? Well, the first thing he did was declare a state of war, which permitted him to act basically without the need of getting approval from anyone, let alone the parliament. So he could act as a dictator. And he let this state of emergency, the state of war, continue for another 2 years. And he could just basically do what he wanted. After the national government had been established, he then went on to the provincial level, where he replaced the civil governors of the provinces in Spain with military officers, at least at first. It was temporary in a lot of cases. Many of the civil leaders were eventually allowed back, but things like censorship and things like that were kept under military supervision. The classic Spanish debate over what language was the official language was once again given center stage. Here, Spanish was declared the only official language for official use and also in the schools. This was definitely a direct shot at the Basque Country and especially Catalonia. Radical workers and ideological movements were sort of suppressed. The anarchists were forced to go underground. Censorship was enforced. There was no longer that freedom of press that this country had enjoyed for many decades. So basically, the government was really clamping down. And Alfonso XIII was happy to see this happen, but he's going to pay a price for this down the road. On the other hand, there were some reforms that were probably or should be seen as somewhat more positive. For example, 5 or 6 years up to 1923, It had become very sort of fashionable. I'm not sure if that's the word we should say, but let's say that for employers, bosses, and workers to start sending out hitmen and, just killers, assassins to kill each other as a way of sort of venting their frustrations with the labor conflicts. This was known as pistolism, and it became very bloody for many years. Between 1918 and 1923, nearly 1,300 murders of this type took place, were committed. But then after the coup, the numbers dropped drastically to just 51 from 1923 to 1928. So in the same duration of time, basically, we went from 1,300 to 51. And that's not too surprising, as military dictatorships tend to have a way of snuffing out violent crime. The government also went after local governments and towns and municipalities throughout the country to control corruption. They were especially interested in stopping a system known as caciquism or caciquismo. It was sort of standard practice in rural Spain. This was basically a setup where you had a boss in the towns, or usually the wealthiest and most influential person who controlled life there, and mainly to the benefit of their own interests. And the result was a lot of corruption, especially political corruption. Primo de Rivera set out to change that and made some inroads, but this is sort of a dynamic that would continue in other ways for many more decades to come. He also managed to bring the Moroccan issue to a close for the most part. At first, it was not so good. He was accused of sort of abandoning the situation. There were some more defeats for the Spaniards. But finally, in 1925, the Spanish, and also with the help of the French, carried out a very successful beach landing in a place called Alhucemas. This operation was considered to be the first successful amphibious landing of modern times, with their use of air cover and mechanized vehicles like tanks. And it would sort of set the blueprint for future amphibious landings, especially in World War II. Apparently, generals and military strategists studied this landing as a model of what to look for when doing these things. The success at Alhucemas made Primo de Rivera especially popular during this time. And then the economy began to turn around, but that was sort of happening in a lot of different places. This was the Roaring Twenties. And on an international level, places like the United States especially, the economy was doing great. And in 1925, Primero de Rivera finally removed the military board, and he got rid of the state of war and replaced it with a civil government, a civil cabinet. And was basically, it was sort of his way of saying that we have finished phase one and are ready to move on to phase two. Some restrictions were lifted, plans for a new constitution were underway, but all of this was being done under the watchful eye of Primo de Rivera, who was still trying to control everything. But there was a bit of moderation taking place. And what else do we have here? It was a busy time. Major state corporations like Telefonica, the phone company, which is now Movistar, was founded, and CAMPSA, the main oil company, was also created. There were important initiatives in infrastructure, like the highway system got started, and then the country's hydrographic setup, by that I'm talking about reservoirs and dams and canals, they got going too, or at least the beginnings. It would take many years before it really got going, but that was the initial idea, and that's sort of the type of thing that military dictatorships are fond of doing. And then there's another one, an interesting one, the famous state hotels called Paradores. These still exist and they're very popular, mainly because most of them are old castles or monasteries or historic buildings, and they've been turned into these really nice hotels. They opened their doors for the first time during this period too. Worker unrest slowed, at least for the first couple of years, and some social reforms regarding education and working conditions were achieved. But success didn't last long. Primo de Rivera himself had many enemies from the army, the nationalists, the workers, the Republicans. By that I mean those who wanted to get rid of the monarchy because they were really mad at Alfonso XIII. And also there were monarchists who were really mad at Primo de Rivera because he wouldn't leave. So God knows he had his enemies. And the regime even had to defend itself from two coup attempts. Two more, one in, I think, in 1925, another one in 1927 or 1929, I can't remember now. By the end of the 20s, Primo de Rivera was losing his grip on the government. Just about everyone was turning on him and no one was supporting him. And to make matters worse, the peseta, Spain's currency at the time, had suffered a major devaluation, so the economy was slipping away, worker unrest increased. And on a personal level, he had diabetes. So by 1930, widespread discontent with Primo de Rivera's regime had reached a critical point, leading to his resignation in January of that year. He would die just 2 months later in Paris from diabetes. Primo de Rivera's legacy is complex. On one hand, he, along with many of his supporters, felt that there was only one way to make Spain progress, and that was under the supervision of a strong military government that would keep the country focused and not let it come undone with distractions. It's quite possible that in some ways he had the country's interest in mind, its best interest. He was a regenerationist, that is, a Spaniard in search of modernizing the country and returning it to at least some of its former greatness. He certainly improved Spain's situation in a couple of areas, but failed to address the deepest and most serious issues such as regionalism and political diversity. He was also having trouble coping with and accepting changing times. And also, he didn't have elections. He wasn't democratic. So these are things that we cannot ignore regardless of any success he might have had. It's one thing to push to modernize in material ways, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're modernizing in terms of modern ideas, modern thinking, and modern attitudes. Alfonso XIII attempted to return Spain to constitutional rule by appointing a series of civilian governments, the most famous being under Dámaso Berenguer. This was known as the soft dictatorship, but it wasn't successful. By then, the monarchy, that is, Alfonso XIII, was deeply associated with the failures of the dictatorship and the failures of many other things in Morocco, and also some corruption scandals that had arisen. The political climate grew increasingly polarized, with Republican sentiments gaining momentum. And then finally, in the municipal elections of April 1931, Republican and Socialist candidates won significant victories in urban areas, which were seen as a rejection of the monarchy. Facing mounting pressure and lacking widespread support, Alfonso XIII chose to leave the country and went into exile, leading to the proclamation of the Second Spanish Republic on April 14, 1931. This marked the end of Alfonso XIII's troubled reign and set the stage for the turbulent years that would follow in Spanish history. But we will stop there because it's a lot. And that will be all for this episode of Spanish History 101. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, or Castos. And you can also check us out on our YouTube channel and subscribe. If you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, Spanish culture. Our podcasts are free, so everyone can enjoy them. But we welcome listeners to support us if they wish. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.